Now, before we dive into our portion of Joseph's life today, let me remind you of where we are in the Joseph story. Jacob, Joseph's father, settled down at the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea. You know exactly where it is, in an area known as Canaan. In the Old Testament, it's called the land of promise, the promised land. And Jacob, back in the day, became a very wealthy man, became a leader over a big farming and ranching operation, had a large household with a lot of livestock. And Jacob had 10 sons, and then he had son number 11, and son number 11 is named Joseph, the man whose life we are studying now. And Joseph's 10 older brothers hate him, because he is Jacob's favorite. They also hate Joseph because Joseph is a mad dreamer. He had some dreams, and he dreamed about his family bowing down to him, with him being their master, both his siblings bowing down to him as well as his parents bowing down to him. And so one day, the 10 older brothers, they're out doing some farming work, and they see the favorite son, Joseph, coming in the distance. He has on this fancy colt that his father gave him to signify that he is the favorite son. And as he comes closer, they hatch a plot to coat jack him. And so they take this special coat that has been given to him, and then they sell Joseph into slavery in Egypt. As Joseph's dreams attest, God has big plans for Joseph, but the road to greatness in God's service is rarely without large potholes along the way, and here is Joseph stuck in a big pothole now. As a slave in Egypt, Joseph rises to become household manager for a man named Potiphar, and we met him a couple of Sundays ago, and Potiphar is the captain of the Egyptian president or Egyptian pharaoh's secret service. That would be the best parallel perhaps that I could come up with. And so Joseph is working inside Potiphar's house, and Mrs. Potiphar has a crush on Joseph. And so she tries to seduce him, and he resists day after day after day, reducing her seductive attempts. And finally, he runs out of the house and runs away and leaves another coat, not the one that was coat jacked, another coat behind. And Mrs. Potiphar lies on him, and he's thrown into jail, falsely accused of attempted sexual assault. And he's put in jail now for running away from the seductress, Mrs. Potiphar. So he gets to prison, and the Bible tells us that the Lord is with Joseph in prison. And so the prison warden sees Joseph and the fact that the Lord is with him, and he promotes Joseph to be in charge of all the prison. He's in charge of everyone there except for the warden. I wonder, though, how many of us looking at Joseph in prison would be saying to ourselves, we're saying to ourselves 2 weeks ago when we looked at the story, and would say to ourselves today, if this is what happens when the Lord is with you, I don't want him with me. Our sermon today is very important. It's very important for us when we find ourselves in the waiting place. You know, waiting for a job offer, waiting for a rebellious daughter to come to her senses and return home to Jesus and to be able to sing from her heart and with full meaning what we just finished singing. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. The waiting place, waiting for the results of a liver biopsy, waiting to hear if the bank will agree to a short sale of your house, waiting for your SAT or GRE test scores, waiting for your retirement account, you know, that invisible thing that just disappeared, poof, waiting for that to come back. Waiting for your doctor to diagnose your mysterious illness. And if you ever have a mysterious illness and a doctor is scratching his head, I had one of those 20 plus years ago. And finally, the doctor looked at me and goes, I don't know what's wrong with you. We could keep spending money, but I don't know what's wrong with you. This is an important story for us when we find ourselves in the waiting place. And as we resume the Joseph story today in Genesis 40, we're welcomed, as you can see in your Bibles, Genesis chapter 40, the first three words of Genesis 40, sometime later. It's a time marker, time stamp. By this point, Joseph has been in slavery and then in prison for over 10 years. Remember a couple weeks ago, I had a 17-year-old stand here in the service, and then I had some guys in their 30s stand because the 30-year-olds were the older brothers. The 17-year-old was Joseph when his coat was taken and he was thrown into the pit. And so sometime later, he's been in prison for over 10 years. At this time, Joseph is around 28 years old. And I imagine that as he's in that prison, he's asking the question, God, have you forgotten me? And I wonder how many people here today are in the waiting place feeling forgotten by God. I wonder how many Josephs we have here today. I wonder how many of us are asking God, how long? How long until I sell my house? How long will I be forced to work in this dead-end job? How long will my marriage hang on by a thread? How long will I be single? How long until my adoption is finalized? God never leaves us, but sometimes, honestly, it seems like he does. God never, ever turns his back on us and walks away from us. Never. But sometimes when we need him the most, the data of life tells us that he has turned his back on us and he has walked away from us. And in the middle of our stories, we can't figure out what God is up to. This is where Joseph is living today. And honestly, it is where I am living today, and it's where many of you are living today. Genesis chapter 40, verse 1. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Verse 2. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. So here's Joseph, about 28 years old, waiting in jail for a crime that he did not commit, and there are two new inmates. So he hears a jail cell go clang, and he looks up, and here come two new inmates in. And they take their places. Both prisoners work for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and both prisoners are high-ranking government officials, and one prisoner is the king's cupbearer, and the other is the king's baker. Now, let me give you a little backstory here. Kings often fear being poisoned. And so, they trust their cupbearer with their very lives. The cupbearer's job is to stand before the king every day and taste all of the king's food and drink and thus prevent the king from being poisoned with decon or something like that. The cupbearer is a highly trusted man with great status and great influence because he's close to the king, he's intimate with the king, he tests everything that goes in the king's mouth. The cupbearer first takes the drink and that the king will receive, and he pours some of it into the palm of his hand, and he slurps it up and drinks just a little bit of it as proof that it is not poisoned. He also tastes some of the food before the king begins his meal, and hence the cupbearer. And you're familiar with a baker and what a baker does. Baker bakes my favorite loaf of bread that my wife doesn't bake. This is it here. And so you know what bakers do. Both of these high-ranking officials end up in the same prison with Joseph. And so verse 1 in your Bibles in chapter 40, verse 1, describes why they are thrown into prison. Joseph is in prison because he's falsely accused and falsely charged with a crime he did not commit. You can see in verse 1 why they're thrown into prison. It is because they have offended, or literally sinned against, the king. And so they are being punished for wrongdoing, but Joseph is being punished though he did nothing wrong. And many of us here have, at some point in our lives, been punished for something we didn't do. Maybe when we were a little kid and our sibling did something and we took the fall for them or took the fall with them and we didn't do anything. But that probably never happened to any of you here because you grew up in perfect families. But anyway, the middle of verse 4. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night. And each dream had a meaning of its own. Verse 6. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. And so he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Let me take a time out here. So here's Joseph. Joseph is in prison. He is in the waiting place, even though he has done nothing wrong. And though he is living his own personal pain in prison, Joseph is concerned about the cupbearer and the baker. And Joseph is quick to observe this morning that something is wrong with these two men. Body language alone tells him that there's a need to be met. And you know, there are people in this room today sitting around you who are in pain, who have great need. And their body language will tell you if you look at them. Their eyes will tell you if you look into their eyes, which are the window to the soul. So Joseph, in his own personal pain, sees that there's a need to meet here. And when you and I suffer, and when you and I are in the waiting place, and we either have been in the waiting place at some point in the past, or we're in the waiting place now, or trust me, we will find ourselves in the waiting place. When we're there, it's hard for us to see other people and their needs, because we're just focused on ourselves and what we want and what we need. And I want this and I need that. I need. It's very easy for us to see only our needs. And what Joseph models for us is the power of caring for people when we are hurting and when we are wounded. What if God wants to use you powerfully? And someone's life before the difficult situation that you're facing cleans up? What if God says, you know what, your mess is still a mess, but even in your mess, I want you to take your eyes off yourself and reach out to someone else. I want what Joseph has. I want to be in the middle of finals and yet not ignore the family drama that has my roommate in tears because of what's going on back home with his parents. I want to be going through a divorce and yet encourage a newly married couple instead of discouraging them. I want to be a second string teammate on a softball team and yet cheer for the girls who start. I want to be financially broke and yet still be willing to share. I want to have a pounding headache from stress at work and yet not take it out on my kids. I want to have a sleepless night because of my screaming newborn and not make my husband pay for it. I want to be traveling through my personal hell and yet offer someone else a slice of heaven. Don't you want to be able to forget about yourself just long enough to unselfishly serve someone else. That's what Joseph does in prison here, in the waiting place. This prison, let me tell you a little bit about it. It's not a minimum security camp. This is not a country club jail for people like Martha Stewart. This is not a place that made the Forbes list of the best places to go to prison. This is no club fed with softball and basketball and soccer and flag football and a universal weight machine and free weights and cardio machines and pool and ping pong tables. No classes offered here in leather working and general art. No air-conditioned dormitories. I want to show you the description of this prison where Joseph is. Paul's going to pop up a slide for you now. Psalm 105, verses 16 through 18. He called down famine on the land and destroyed all their supplies of food, and he sent a man before them. So this is a retelling of the history of ancient Israel. Joseph, here's our main star, sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with shackles. His neck was put in irons. So while in jail, in this waiting place, Joseph's feet are hurt and they're bruised with shackles, and his neck is placed in an iron collar. Does that sound like a country club jail to you? So these two inmates who are in this jail have confusing, abnormal dreams. Notice verse 8 in your Bibles, chapter 40, verse 8. "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there's no one to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." And verse 9, so the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. Now, the dream he has is just, it's just a weird dream, just like most of your dreams are weird. Just a weird dream. There's a vine, there are three branches, there are grapes. Not a lot of interpretations needed except for the three branches that signify 3 days. And so Joseph explains the dream in verse 13. You can see it in your Bibles, verse 13. "Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer." So that's the interpretation of the dream. You're going to get out in 3 days, and you'll get your job back. And you'll be pouring stuff in the palm of your hand and slurping it and eating the fine food from the Pharaoh's table, and everything will be fine again. Now, Joseph makes a request in verse 14. You can see it there. "But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of prison." Middle of verse 15. "I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." So right now, Joseph wants out of prison. He wants out of the waiting place. Joseph is not okay where he is, but he is faithful where he is. And so the baker has been listening to the interpretation of the cupbearer's dream and the good outcome of the cupbearer's dream. And so now he finds the courage to come forward to Joseph and say, "Hey, Joseph, can I share my dream with you now?" So the baker, and he has a dream about a bread, about some bread and a basket. Notice verse 16. "When the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation," he knew that all was well, "he said to Joseph, 'I too had a dream. On my head were three baskets of bread.'" Now, don't ask me how he got three baskets of bread on his head. He must have had a big head. I don't know. "But three baskets of bread." Maybe they were stacked one on top of each other. Verse 17, "In the top basket," evidently they were stacked on top of each other, "were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." Joseph interprets the dream in verse 18. You can see it there. "This is what it means," Joseph said. "The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat away your flesh. It's kind of gross, isn't it? So two men with two different dreams slated for two different destinies. We can only imagine how differently they slept that night. How would you have slept if you were the baker? We can only imagine. One will awaken to life and the other to death. And maybe Joseph, as he goes to bed that night, for the first time in over 10 years, goes to bed with a glimmer of hope for the future because he asked the cupbearer, "Remember me." So what happens? Notice verse 20 in your Bibles. Now the third day was Pharaoh's birthday. And he gave a feast for all his officials, and he lifted up the heads of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of his officials, and he restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had said in his interpretation. So now Joseph gets out, right? Verse 23. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. So caught up in the Pharaoh's big birthday bash and the thrill of his own good fortune, the fact that he was once in prison and now 3 days later he's out, the cupbearer totally forgets the one who cared for him in prison. And some of us know what it's like to be like Joseph and go to bed one night and have high hopes only to have them dashed 3 days later, and that's exactly what happens to Joseph. Imagine you've been stuck in a cubicle behind a workstation in a dead-end job for years. And you're not stuck because you aren't qualified or because you're not ambitious. You're stuck because no one has noticed your qualifications or your ambition. But on Thursday, September 8, 2011, the power goes out and you find yourself stuck in the elevator with one of your company's senior executive vice presidents. Just the two of you. Just the two of you. He has nothing to do but talk to you. And you tell him your background and you tell him your dreams and he tells you about what's going on in his personal life and what's going on in the upper echelons of the company. And in fact, you're able to give him some helpful insight and advice that will solve one of the company's ongoing challenges and crises. And he is sincerely thankful to you for your wisdom. And it looks like the beginning of a very advantageous friendship. After 2 hours, 27 minutes, you're both rescued by the fire department and you say your goodbyes and shake as you go. And you say to him, "Remember me. The next time you have an opening up there, remember me." He answers, "I will. I definitely will. Count on it." But he doesn't. So several openings come and go. You never receive a call. That's exactly where Joseph is right now, in prison, in the waiting place. Now, some of us know what it's like to get our hopes up only to have them dashed. And sometimes we might be sitting on an airplane ready to take off. We see the lightning in the distance and we see the thunderstorm rolling into the airfield in Chicago. And we're hoping and praying as we're listening to the cockpit, "God, just get us out of here now. Or we're going to be stuck here for 4 hours sitting on this plane in prison." And the pilot says, "Fasten your seatbelts. We're ready to go." And then the pilot comes back on and says, "Oh, can't do it." Some of us know what it's like to almost get the job. Some of us know what it's like to be standing in line to buy the last one, and the person in front of us gets it. Some of us know what it's like to think you passed a class and you learned that you did not. Some of us get our hopes up only to have them dashed and be kept in the waiting place. And may I say to you, this will mess with you.
So Joseph, he stays in prison. He stays in the waiting place for 2 more years. This is the 3rd major strike in his life. Strike 1, coat jacking and being sold into slavery by his brothers. Strike 2, the seduction of Potiphar's wife and her lies on him, resulting in him being convicted of a crime he did not commit. Strike 3, the cupbearer forgetting about Joseph and not remembering him. And if you were Joseph right now on these days, on these nights, in this prison, in shackles, with a neck iron, what would you believe about God's involvement in your life during these years? If I were Joseph, I would have some questions for God. Like, hey, God, have you forgotten me? God, do you see? Do you know? Do you care? God, are you really good? God, are you there? And the answer comes back from heaven. Joseph, will you trust me? Will you trust me? In the middle of our life story, we often can't figure out what God is up to. But the question is, will we trust God? Let's skip to the next scene on this Blu-ray disc of Joseph's life. It's 2 full years later, around the time of Pharaoh's birthday again. On the 2nd anniversary of the cupbearer's release from prison. And God reveals to Pharaoh what is in store for Egypt with, guess what? Another pair of disturbing dreams. Chapter 41, verse 1. Chapter 41, verse 1. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile. It's a river in Egypt, just like it is today. It was then. When out of the river, there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly, gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. Verse 5, fell asleep again. Had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. The 2 dreams are very Egyptian. Pharaoh dreams of cows and reeds and heads of grain, which are all natural symbols of food in Egypt. And the Nile River is a source of Egypt's power and Pharaoh's power and of fertility and of life. And without the Nile, there'd be no Egypt, no great kingdom of Egypt. And the cows submerge themselves in the river to escape the heat of Egypt and the insects of Egypt and the east wind, much like a Santa Ana here in Southern California, blows from the Saharan Desert in late spring and early fall. And it often withers vegetation. Verse 8, in the morning, Pharaoh's mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt, and Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. So these dreams they're a distressing puzzle because the 7 lean cows remain lean and skinny even after eating the fat cattle. And the same is true of the grain. It's not normal for cows to eat cows or grain to eat grain, and lean things should be fattened by what they eat. At least that's how it works for us, doesn't it? So something is wrong. But what is it? So the wisest and best educated men in the art of interpreting dreams come before the Pharaoh with their long flowing robes, and they're unable to understand the 2 dreams. And Joseph, meanwhile, is still in prison, the waiting place, forgotten by the cupbearer, and he must still be asking, has God forgotten me? Joseph is in the middle of his life story. He's already burned up his late teens and his 20s as a slave in Potiphar's house and in Pharaoh's prison in shackles and in neck irons. He has been deeply disappointed, and he cannot figure out what God is up to. And neither can we figure out what God is up to in the middle of our life stories. But God can restore the years in the waiting place. Alas, cupbearer remembers Joseph and his ability to interpret dreams. Verse 9, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, today I'm reminded of my shortcomings, the thing I did that got me thrown into jail. Verse 10, Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now notice how he disparagingly describes Joseph. Verse 12, now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And so they rush Joseph to Pharaoh, because Pharaoh must not be kept waiting. And Joseph, before he comes in to meet Pharaoh, shaves his head, shaves his face, because Egyptians at this time are clean shaven for hygiene reasons. And so Joseph also has to change his clothes. He tries to rub out, I imagine, those neck iron bruises in his neck and the shackle bruises on his ankles. And now Joseph has his big chance. Verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream and no one can interpret it, but I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you, young Hebrew, can interpret it. Verse 16, I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God, and may I say to you, when you read through the Bible, whenever you see a but God, just stop. But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. In other words, he's saying, you know what, Pharaoh? I'm not a dream doctor, but there is a God in heaven, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. There is a creator God in heaven, and he will give you your answer. Verse 17, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, in my dream, and Pharaoh goes on to describe his dreams to Joseph. Now Joseph interprets the dreams. Verse 25, drop down to verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. Verse 27, the seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered, because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. So here's Joseph standing before Pharaoh, the most powerful person in the world, and he gives him good news and bad news. Abundance is the good news, followed by famine, which is the bad news. It would be very easy for Joseph to give the interpretation and just stop here, but he doesn't. Joseph counsels Pharaoh
in verse 33. And now, let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let me just say as an aside, Pharaoh has just learned that he doesn't have any discerning and wise men. Just for the record. Verse 34. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt so that the country may not be ruined by the famine. So Joseph gives Pharaoh three pieces of advice. You can see them here. Appoint a capable prime minister, appoint county commissioners, and institutionalize a national savings program. What a novel idea. You mean we shouldn't just go into more and more debt? As a country, we should save? I better stop before I start preaching another sermon. Who will Pharaoh pick as the prime minister? Notice verse 38. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." Verse 41. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. His signet ring is like an impersonation of Pharaoh himself. And so you use your signet ring to sign documents, to officialize them. It's kind of like if you could wear a notary public seal on your finger and you just go around wielding your power. So that's the purpose of the signet ring. Middle of verse 42, he dressed him in robes of fine linen. This is a man who had a coat jacking a few years ago. Robes of fine linen. This is a man who left a cloak beside Mrs. Potiphar as he ran for his life. Robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. Yes, they even wore bling back in the day. Verse 43. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command. And men shouted before him, "Make way!" Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. This is like the presidential motorcade. The president was here a couple of weeks ago, and you have the beast in which the president rides, and you have all these other vehicles around them, and it's in essence, the law enforcement officers and the Secret Service are saying, "Make way, make way. Here comes our president in the beast." So Joseph riding in the beast back in that day, the chariot, and people were saying, shouting before him, "Make way." Now, 13 years after being sold, notice what happens in verse 44. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zephanat-Paneah and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. And during the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. Joseph collected all the produce, all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored it in the cities. In each city, he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. And Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. And it was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, "It is because God has made me forget all my trouble in all my father's household." The second son he named Ephraim and said, "It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." the waiting place.
Egypt is the land of Joseph's suffering. Egypt is Joseph's waiting place.
What's your waiting place?
Joseph reminds me of a book written by a great theologian who was adopted by San Diego. The great theologian's name is Dr. Seuss. And I'd like to read to you something that reminds me of Joseph. There'll be a couple of images on the screen to show you the artwork on these two pages. This is what this theologian writes. You can get so confused that you will start in to race down long, wiggled roads at a breakneck pace and grind on for miles across weirdish, wild space, headed, I fear, toward a most useless place, the waiting place. For people just waiting. Waiting for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for a yes or no, or waiting for their hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting. Waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for the wind to fly a kite, or waiting around for Friday night, or waiting, perhaps, for their Uncle Jake, or a pot to boil, or a better break, or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wig with curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. Waiting is one of the hardest things that you can do. But the waiting place is where faith grows. We can decide where our hearts go while we are in the waiting place. So what is Joseph's hope in the waiting place? It's simply this, that nothing can keep Joseph from living out God's sovereign purpose for his difficult life. And for those of you who are in the waiting place this morning, God will meet you. He is enough for you, even in Egypt. The waiting place.